But these two agencies are two of many, many under Business Oregon. So there's a whole lot of bureaucratic pieces between the whole lot of ways that they have to get approval for everything they do. They have to use the Business Oregon website. They have to just all these little pieces. It's just a cumbersome bureaucratic process. So having them be able to work more effectively would be helpful for every arts group in the state. Everybody. I mean, this is like a real like tenet for all of us to be able to work well. So we were actually looking forward to them possibly merging in 2027 was the plan. And now, because this didn't pass, all of that has to be delayed now until 2029. And all of these sort of pieces that had this momentum going is having to be delayed. So we're a little bit kind of disappointed in that and kind of baffled, and we'll keep an eye out, and hopefully all of that will go more smoothly in a couple of years.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Hannah. And you can find all these stories and more at Oregon Arts Watch at orartswatch.org.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Have a great
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers. We host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have two educators from Coquille. I hope I pronounced that correctly. We have Tyler Linneman and Joe Nichols. Welcome to both of you.
Hi there, Stephen. Thanks for the welcome. Yeah. Thanks for having us here today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
thanks for having us today.
Would you start, both of you, maybe Tyler go first. What just sort of some basics, like what's your job as an educator and how long have you been in this work?
Yeah, so I am a 7th and 8th grade science teacher, and this was year 8 for me. Well, technically 7.5. I started halfway through the first year of my career.
Gotcha. And what about you, Joe?
I'm going into my 10th year of teaching. I've mostly taught 5th grade. Next year, I'll be teaching 4th grade, though. So.
Gotcha. Okay. And we often ask what inspired educators to get into the field. So I don't know if you all have a very short sort of story or just something that what inspired you, do you think, to become an educator?
Well, for me, this is Tyler talking. I actually wasn't inspired to become an educator. I know that's kind of taboo to talk about, but this definitely was not my first career choice, but it is something that just I found my way into it, and I definitely am happy to be here and, you know, proud to be a teacher.
Yeah.
This is Joe, and for me, I was inspired by, I used to do swimming lessons, and I really enjoyed watching kids learn and grow, and so that kind of set me on a path of like, well, maybe I want to be a teacher, and I really do enjoy working with the younger kids and watching them learn and grow and improve throughout a school year, so.
Wow, I have a similar story, Joe. I also started as a teenager teaching swim lessons to kids, so that's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So you also both have leadership positions in your union. How did you get involved in your union?
Well, I'm the current president of the union, but I got involved largely because of Joe. He was our past president for the past 3 years. And this year he stepped up to be my vice president and kind of show me the ropes as I was taking things over. But going back a little bit further, the only reason that I really became involved in the union initially was because we did not have a write-in for the junior high rep position in our association. And so somebody actually wrote me in as a joke, and I was the only write-in, so I got the position. So that was that was kind of my little entry into the association, and just kind of built up the role over the years, and now taken over for Joe this year.
Great. And you, Joe?
For me, I took over right in the middle of COVID. The president before me did, like, when COVID first started, and then the following school year when we were still going through all the COVID stuff, was when I officially took over. I just wasn't happy with really the direction that our association was going, and I felt like we needed more protections with all of the things from the state and all the requirements. So great. That's why I volunteered to take it over.
Nice.
So could you tell our listeners a little bit about your small town, Coquille, and just tell us about the community, what it's like to live and work there?
Yeah, for Joe and I, it's actually a pretty special thing because we both grew up here in this community. Joe and I were in the same graduating class in 2011. We were friends growing up, and so it's kind of special to be able to be leaders, be educators in a community that we grew up in all the way since we were just little kids. And Coquille, it's a just your small kind of little logging community that had its heyday back in like the 70s, where there was a lot going on and a lot of people and a lot of youth. But these days it's more of kind of like a sunset community for the, I don't want to say bigger cities around here, but for the little bit bigger towns like Coos Bay and North Bend. And so we've got an older population, but we've got a really cool community here. And as we'll talk about here soon, a community that around the right cause can really rally together.
So we invited you on the show because your union came very close to going on strike. What were the main issues that you were bargaining over?
Joe, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, sure. So the district came with a schedule change, and it would have increased teacher workload significantly. And they were also looking at taking away, we had like, so we have our contracted prep time, but we had this additional teacher directed prep time, and the district called it unassigned time, but we've had it for so long. They were trying to take it away. And so they were asking us to do a lot more work with less time to complete that work. And so that was kind of the main driving issues for what led us to almost going on strike.
And just to talk a little bit more about these changes, whose idea, well, you said it was the district idea. Was there any input from educators or from the community about these changes?
They did not seek our input before they presented the six period schedule change idea to us. They kind of just showed us the schedule and said, first come, first serve on what you want to teach. Community members weren't involved. We had community members go to board meetings. I think like in February, is that right, Tyler? Because you were there too.
Yeah, February.
Yeah, and asking questions because they had kind of heard that there are these changes coming and the district didn't seek any community input. So the only input the district wanted was the details of how a six period schedule could work. They kind of had a general idea and wanted the teachers to figure out everything else, all the smaller details. So no teacher input really.
And so you were bargaining this in the middle of your contract, not bargaining for a new contract. Can you talk a little bit about interim bargaining, what that is, and why your district was pushing it?
Sure. This was a real learning experience for all of us, I think, because I think we all assumed, Joe in his last year as president last year, he led our bargaining team. I was part of the bargaining team, and we felt like we really got a great contract last year, and we were very excited about that. And Joe and I kind of joked about how this year it would be so easy to be the association president because, mm-hmm. Everything had already been taken care of. But apparently this is something that happens quite frequently where a contract is settled, but maybe the district doesn't get something that they were aiming for. And so instead of trying to negotiate those things and bargain them, they just try to implement them midterm in the contract. So that's really what we had here, a case of the district wanting to do something different, maybe not bringing that up in bargaining, and then just trying to put us on some train tracks midterm. So I don't know, Joe might have known something about this before, but I definitely didn't. I didn't know interim bargaining was a thing. But yes, in the state of Oregon, you can demand to bargain over mandatory subjects when they've been changed by the district, and you have a 90-day period to go into that bargaining. The district did not push for that bargaining at all. This was something that had to be initiated by our association. And I do believe that if we had not initiated any sort of bargaining, that there would have been zero interest from the district standpoint to bargain this issue.
So they were just trying to implement and hope you guys would just sort of roll over and take these changes. And then you initiated this bargain over this mandatory issue of workload. Is that what it would fall under?
Yeah, it really came down to changes in working conditions, both, like Joe mentioned, a loss of that unassigned time, but also a humongous increase in the amount of students that our teachers would be serving. Rather than our fifth grade teachers having their typical self-contained classroom of 28 students, something like that, they would be seeing and grading for and creating parent contacts for 140 plus students every day. And as a junior high teacher myself, I know how taxing that is. And so when I heard our Coquille elementary teachers wanting to push back against that, I was right there with them.
Can you just say a little bit more about that change? It was to have elementary have more of a rotating schedule similar to middle and high school?
Yeah. So when Joe brought up the issues of this schedule change, it really was a fundamental change of the educational model at Coquille Valley Elementary from where currently fifth grade is a self-contained elementary style classroom. Sixth grade does this sort of hybrid model where they have like three periods per day. But the district's plan was to change from those models to both fifth and sixth grade having a six period junior high style sort of day. And just on its face value there, that is a huge change. But when we really started to dig into the details, we started to see just how big of a change that would be for our teachers and for our students. There were a lot of potential issues there.
Great. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. And unlike corporate media, KBOO is commercial free and relies on you, the listener, to function and survive on the air as a community radio station. So please, if you are able, go to kboo.fm/give to make a one-time donation, or better yet, become a monthly donor. So Tyler, take us through what happened when you first heard about what they wanted to do up until your strike date. Maybe just some of the low points and the high points of that time.
Ooh, okay. That is a big topic because it was a long time and a lot of efforts were put into the situation. So the district initially announced this plan back in January. And from that point, we had immediate pushback from our teachers, a lot of concerns by the way that it was proposed. And we, Joe and I, had a lot of concerns about that. So we took it to the superintendent. We said, hey, I don't know if you understand how this was proposed to our teachers, but they're not happy about it. At the time, we were actually happy to hear the superintendent's response because he seemed to express that that's not how he wanted it to go either. So we kind of took a deep breath, and there was a listening session just a few days later where the superintendent said, hey, I want to get the teachers together. Let's all talk about it and let's make sure everybody's on the same page. And we thought that was going to be a quick turning point in the situation. But instead, the superintendent doubled down on pretty much everything that the principal had presented the week prior. And so that's where things really started to ramp up. Our members were really still very concerned about what was going on. And so they asked us to file a grievance based on some contractual language and changes in working conditions. And so we did. So we filed that grievance, and that grievance took us all the way through the superintendent level where it was denied, the board hearing level where it was denied. And we even had appealed that to arbitration, but luckily we never had to get to the arbitration point because that was scheduled for all the way out in August. Meanwhile, as I kind of mentioned to Rachel earlier, we also had to go through the expedited bargaining process. And so as we were kind of finishing up the grievance process, we also engaged with the district in that expedited bargaining, but we didn't get far for that. 90 days is not a lot of time. And especially when you're working with a district and an association who have never done that before, it really took us a while to get together, get to the table, and get working on those issues. And unfortunately, by the time we got to the table, we really only had one meaningful bargaining session. And at that session, the district was just completely unwilling to talk about any alternatives to the schedule change that they had planned. They were unwilling to... They were just really unwilling to try to bring up anything other than what they wanted to do. And so we ended that bargaining session at an impasse and really just looking for our next steps at that point. So to get us up to the strike point, we did allow a brief period of time where the teachers and the principal were trying to work together to figure out how this new schedule would work at Cocoa Valley Elementary. And unfortunately, as this principal and the teachers worked together, the teachers found more and more reasons why this would be a terrible, terrible idea for our students and our staff. And so at that point, that's where we started having more serious conversations with those teachers about, hey, our next options are to call a strike vote. And is that something you want to do? And there was a resounding yes. So then the next piece of that was trying to get the rest of our district, our membership on board and up to date with the situation and see if there would be support district-wide for a strike. And luckily, There was.
Great. So,
are you able Stephen, to hear me okay? I'm having some.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to just talk about sort of that last day? You were all ready to go on strike in the morning. Maybe just take us through that. What happened there on that last day?
Are you talking about the last day of mediation, like that Monday before the strike was going to start on Tuesday?
Yeah, I just know that you were all set to strike up until like the wee hours of the morning, and then what happened?
Mm-hmm. Well, we were set to strike starting Tuesday. I can't remember what day. That was June. Oh, I can't remember. But we were set to strike Tuesday morning, and we had our third mediation session with the district. This was after the strike vote was called, and the district was pressured into entering into mediation with us. And we were having our third mediation session. We really didn't have any progress in the first two mediation sessions. And we were hopeful that we could get something done and avoid the strike. And wouldn't you know it, with the strike looming the following day, the district's tone had changed very, very considerably.
Huh, interesting.
Where in the first two mediation sessions, our superintendent was very clear, we will not negotiate the schedule. They put that in writing. They told that to us over Zoom in our mediation, because we were doing it through Zoom for the first two sessions. But then in the third session, after a little bit more pressure because of the strike looming, as well as some awesome community organizing that we did, we were able to get a little bit different message from the district, and our superintendent came to the table and said, we are happy to negotiate the schedule. So at that point, we knew that there was a big change in how negotiations were going to go, and we battled through 16 straight hours of mediation to reach a resolution at about 2 a.m.
Wow. Okay. And talk about how this experience has maybe impacted your local, your union. Do you feel like it's stronger now coming out of this experience? What sort of impact has it had?
First, Joe, I've been talking a lot. If you want to chime in, you're more than welcome to, but if you want me to keep going, that's fine.
I can talk about this some, yeah. So our local, when I first took over, we would stand together, but it was not, I wouldn't say we were overly solid when I first took over. And going through this, we did a lot more meetings, and we had some get together stuff, you know, outside of work, that I think a lot of our members appreciated. And so I feel like coming out of this, our members are going to be a lot more unified moving forward. And I feel like they, you know, they won something. And I feel like maybe before with the district, they always kind of felt that the district kind of steamrolled teachers on things. And I feel like a lot of teachers feel like their voices were maybe heard, and that moving forward, things will change on other things that we've got going on in the district too.
Great. And
can you just let us know how many members are in your union, and how many, just roughly the size of your district?
We have a total membership of 72 members, and that's a pretty good portion of our teachers. We have 76 teachers across the district.
Okay.
72 members.
I realized I didn't have a sense of how large your membership was.
Not very large.
Yeah. So how about the overall impact on the community at large, specifically between Coquille and your union and community members? How did this affect that?
So Coquille, you know, thinking about working in Coquille and being an educator in Coquille, it's this interesting community where everybody is very, very quiet about what's going on at the schools until they aren't. And so this situation, as soon as we were able to engage our community and talk to them a little bit more about what was going on and how it might affect their students, they became very supportive very fast. And really, I have to give a ton of credit to our community, because I think going into that third mediation session where we did have a lot more leverage to negotiate the things we wanted to negotiate, I think that was because of our community. That Saturday before the third session, we had held a community forum where we were able to engage over 120 people who attended our forum, which I know doesn't sound like a lot of people to probably people listening to this, but 120 people in Coquille showing up all at the same time is a huge event. And we were able to really answer a lot of the community's questions. We were able to have them hear directly from some affected teachers, some affected parents, and even some affected students. Shout out to our students who had their own organizing efforts and actually scheduled their own protests, which was fantastic. But through those efforts, engaging our community, we were able to help everybody see, hey, we're not fighting for ourselves. This isn't about pay. This isn't about benefits. This is truly about what we think is best as educators for your students and for our community. And once they understood that, they were 100% on our side. And, you know, they were emailing the superintendent and calling the superintendent and letting them know exactly how they felt about the situation. And so having that happen on Saturday and then going into mediation on Monday, there was a huge shift. And I think the community was at the heart of that.
So what were some lessons learned from this event, this situation? And are there things that you want to sort of proactively add to your union work moving forward?
Kind of going back to what Joe just mentioned about having people together, I think the biggest lesson that I learned as a president, where this year I didn't have a lot of efforts to get people together, because my thought on it was, oh, people don't want to come to a union meeting. I'll only bother them if it's something that's important. And when it got important this year, we bothered them for sure. But what I've really found as we got people together more and more to work on ramping up for a strike, our members really, they want to spend time together. And that's hard to do during the course of a busy year. But I think going forward, one of my huge goals as union president this next year is to find ways to get our membership together so that even in this small community, there's teachers that don't know each other, and our members should know each other. And so trying to find ways to get people together in fun ways, not just for the union business, but just trying to bring people together and keep them connected.
And Joe, do you have any thoughts to add to this?
I agree with Tyler. I think doing more things to get our members together will help. We bargain our next contract in a couple of years. So I think over this next school year, if we can do more things that get them together, I think it'll help us going into our next round of contract bargaining. So.
And how many people are on your bargaining team when you bargain with the district?
How many did we have on our last bargaining, or well, for our mediation session, sorry, I was thinking of last CBA bargaining, mm-hmm. but for our mediation, we had myself, Joe, we had our Uniserv rep, Chico, we had a special education teacher at CBE, Jennifer Armando, we had our CEA secretary, Julia Scaleri, and kind of a host of other people from the Oregon Education Association kind of coming in and out. Alex Howe and Amber, I'm forgetting her last
Cooper.
Name. Amber Cooper, that's right. Thank you, Joe. Evan Wickersham was a big help as well. So all those people kind of played a part on our bargaining team, and very thankful for their knowledge and expertise.
And I just want to add too that I think one of the things that sort of excited me about your actions was that you are in a rural part of Oregon. And sometimes, you know, I mean, Rachel and I are both in the Portland metro area, and we hear the, well, yeah, but we're, you know, somebody from a more rural part of Oregon will say, well, we're from a more rural part of Oregon. We can't possibly, you know, build for a strike or do that kind of work. And so it was really inspiring to see that, no, it can actually happen anywhere. It's not like, you know, this rural urban divide that sometimes gets thrown out. I think we make a bigger deal of it than it is. Not that there aren't some little differences here and there, but I think overall as union members, the work that we do is it's the same, right? We're mm-hmm. fighting for workers, we're fighting for our students. So yeah, hats off to both of you and to your local.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us on KBOO. Thanks to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another Labor Radio show.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Do you need some quiet mood music? Some soothing sounds?
Well, then never listen to Life During Wartime, because they just play really obnoxious DIY punk from local bands and international acts. Sometimes they have bands play live, and it's all with the yelling and the screaming and the, I don't like my mom and dad or my teachers and all that kind of stuff. That's Life During Wartime, every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO.